The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. We'll talk about cotton today. How about that? We got Josh, Chandler, and Scott in here. How's it going, guys?
It's going good. It's nice in this AC.
Yeah, we'll say that. Just don't go outside.
Yeah, it's been a warm week for sure.
So today is July 31st, the last day of the month, and we just wrapped up three consecutive days of field days / crop tours. And I think we were in Bruton on Tuesday. I told Brad he picked the hottest day of the year. We were in Society Hill on Wednesday. I told Will Yates that he picked the most humid day of the year. It wasn't too bad at Tennessee Valley on Thursday.
No, it wasn't bad.
Comparatively speaking, anyway, it wasn't bad.
Right. It was a Goldilocks scenario, you know, one of those kind of deals.
What's that?
With these Goldilocks scenarios, with these field days, you know.
What's Goldilocks scenario?
Just right. Too much, a little bit, you know, too much, too little, just right, you know.
Is that what Goldilocks was?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Goldilocks principle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife.
You're going to have to, and you don't know.
I have a 4-year-old little girl.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. Scott, you're going to have to go back in your notes,
man. People are going to think I'm making up my daughter. All right, let's get back on the road. All right, Josh, give us a cotton crop update.
All right, so overall, crops progressing pretty well across the state. We've been catching some timely rains in the state, mainly in North Alabama. You know, when I look over the forecast and looking at the radar, it seems like the northeast and northwest section, they're catching pretty good rain, and it shows, right? You know, we were up in Tennessee Valley at Belmina Station. That cotton was looking pretty dadgum good. Fruit was setting well. Most of my cotton that I had was going into peak bloom, about third, fourth week of bloom or so. Everything was looking good up there. However, you know, got to be a Debbie Downer. There are some dry pockets around in the state. Some in the central part of Alabama are not catching as much timely rain. So there is a little bit of drought stress as we go into that flowering period. And then, of course, when we move down to the south part of Alabama and into the central as well, we do still have that good bit of later planted cotton. I know I was spraying a trial this morning on farm, and that cotton was still at match head. It was just about to start candling probably in the next few days, but we're still a couple days out from first flower. So we still got a good ways to go. You know, the bottom line I would say is that, you know, we're sitting pretty good. We're catching rains. Hopefully that trend will continue, but we still got a long way to go in cotton. Cotton looks good. I'm saying it's looking nice now, but that doesn't mean anything until we pick it and take it to the gin. We'll make a decision there.
You know, I see on your little inside baseball for the listeners. Whenever Dr. Josh Lee's on the podcast, he brings us a really nice handout with his notes and an outline. And I see, just looking at it, 57% setting bowls is what USDA said. 90%
yep.
square and 57%
yep.
setting bowls.
Yep.
Which is right on the 5-year average.
Correct.
It's kind of hard to believe.
It is. I pulled that number today before we got over here, and I looked at that, and I was like making sure I was reading everything right, but that was correct. I mean,
everybody you talk to in South Alabama talks about how late the crop is.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know what, quote, setting bowls, how they define that in the USDA report.
That's true.
Does that mean first bloom, or does that mean peak bloom, or what is this? What is setting bowls?
Correct. That's going to be a little subjective.
Yeah.
Where exactly, how many data points are they taking from each farm, like the farms in Alabama?
Right.
Well, where are they taking it from? So that's a little bit up for discussion. But just to give like a key point, do I think it's a little high? Probably so, especially if you move into the more southern part of the state.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with you, Scott. But overall, you know, we're talking, you know, as an extension specialist, you always get phone calls. Hey, what's this? What's this looking like? And so one of the calls I've been getting a few lately are about fungicide applications. Since we are catching these timely rains and we are getting I've seen some areas of some rank cotton. We weren't as timely on some PGR management, and we're getting a little bit concerned about fungicides. You know, do I have target spot? Do I have, you know, something that I need to be aware of, right? And so, you know, for example, I went out to a field last week, went out there and trying to troubleshoot a thing if we need to spray for target spot. Well, went out there and kind of looked, and it was Stemphylium. It wasn't target spot. So that's one of the main things, you know, we're thinking about fungicide applications to make sure we're identifying the correct target here. When we are thinking about spraying those fungicides, and we're trying, you know, if they're needed, of course, but we need to, like anything to do with insects, Scott, you know, you need to look at a threshold, right? We don't want to just throw money out there and not see a return. That doesn't make any kind of economical sense. So just to, you know, talk with, you know, from Dr. Amanda Shear's stuff, you know, just to talk about 2 points. Our fungicide application should begin at the first sign of defoliation. So again, while you're scouting in there, kind of look at that crop overall, look and see what's going on. And then only apply those fungicide if the disease onset occurs prior to the 6th week of bloom and weather conditions remain favorable for disease in the upcoming 5-day forecast. So if you got that upcoming forecast of real cloudy, rainy conditions along with rank growth cotton, all right, you're still going into bloom, that may be an option for you to do. If you want more information, and I highly suggest more information on this, definitely visit the ACES Cotton IPM Guide. It's got product rates, use rates, and application timings as well right there.
What a threshold that is.
Did you see? Yeah.
Read that again.
What you got here?
Only apply fungicide if disease onset occurs prior to the 6 weeks of bloom and weather conditions remain favorable for disease during the next 5 days.
Yeah.
It's a lot of research to figure that out.
It is.
You know what I mean?
It's intense. Yeah. And so, you know, I actually had Megan, you know, your previous student. Mm-hmm. She kind of walked plots with me and we were kind of talking and I talked with Amanda and it's hard to come up with this threshold.
Yeah.
It's not like in you know, insects, you've got a certain number. They're going to have this amount of damage, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I'm going to do. But this is so dependent.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's a hard call to make.
It depends.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to kind of address it. But pretty wild, yeah. But just be kind of on the lookout, that kind of stuff, before you pull the trigger. Make sure you know. And so kind of what I want to talk with Chandler here today is with potassium and nitrogen and that kind of stuff with foliar stuff. You know, I mentioned about stemphylium, and I am seeing it already in some cotton fields. It's mainly being shown up in some drought-stressed, what I call hard areas to farm on your fields, you know, clay pockets, areas that just don't perform as well as the rest of the field. They're kind of stressed and definitely maybe drought stressed in that case. They're going to really show those stemphylium symptoms. Those are going to be those reddening of the leaves, that kind of stuff. Cotton doesn't overall look as good. So Chandler, I'm going to kind of throw this off to Chandler because I've gotten several calls, and he has too, about foliar feeding cotton. I've heard a lot about it in terms of nitrogen foliar feeding as well as potassium. So I'm going to kind of throw it into him and get his opinions and thoughts.
Yeah, so the potassium's kind of been popping up a lot lately. Seems like a lot of the questions I've been getting and hearing about is a lot of potassium questions. And it's kind of been interesting because, you know, sometimes people are wanting to do potassium, but they're not always sure what product. They're like, well, I'm just going to go buy potassium. And so that's kind of one of the first things I start noting is like, well, first of all, do you actually need the potassium? And the second thing is, okay, if we probably need the potassium, we're probably low. You know, you've had historic issues with that field. You've maybe got some stem field that's showing up. That's a good sign. You need potassium. There's some other good indicators you need potassium. And so then they're like, well, I need to go buy a product. And they're not really sure a product and they're not sure the rates. And they're like, is it really worth the 2% or what, or 2 pounds per acre, whatever you can get out there? And that's another thing I'd like to, you know, remind people is there's different uptake efficiency. So not only is there different percentages, you know, you get your NPK, so your 0026s or 29s or whatever in your foliar for potassiums, but some of them have, you know, 15, 20% uptake, and some of them have like a 40, 45% uptake. So that's a big change. If you have two products that are, you know, 0029, one's 45% uptake and one's 20% uptake, you know, that's going to be a big change. You're going to get twice as much product in one product versus the other. So that's something you need to kind of keep in mind if you are going to go down that route of doing foliars. But ultimately, foliars are, they're going to be that little bump. They're going to play the biggest role in that stressed cotton stuff that's, you know, having a hard time. Maybe it's got a little pressures from different things, drought or disease or something. That's where it's going to make the biggest move on that potassium needle. It's not in your well-fertilized areas. And ultimately, foliar feeding can be good, can be beneficial, and you can actually see a good benefit. But you're not always going to see a benefit, especially if you spray it too late. You know, you got to keep that in mind. So once you get near that cutout time point, you start to get a little too late. A lot of times we want to see around, you know, first flower up to peak bloom and around that region right there, then a couple of weeks in that middle right there when it's in reproductive. But once you get into cutout after that, usually economically, it does not make sense.
And so this is just for foliar potassium, correct?
And that's just for foliar potassium. Okay.
So going out, looking at, you know, first flower to peak bloom, and we're halting it at cutout.
Cutout, yep.
Correct. Okay.
That's pretty much the optimal range. And that's also where you can tissue test and also kind of get that estimation if you actually need a little bit of nutrients or not. So if you pull tissue samples prior to that, when it's in vegetative, the fluxes and the nutrients in the leaves are so much that you can't really get a good picture of how much is needed. And if you are going to pull tissue samples, remember to pull some for your good spot, some for your bad spot, and use that as your comparison. Don't only pull from the bad spot. And then also, foliars aren't going to make up for if you don't have a solid plan in place for your actual granular applications or your preseason applications. So make sure you have a solid plan set up with that. And then tying back over to nitrogen for foliar feeding. So nitrogen can bump up the yield. You know, you got to watch to make sure you don't start getting rank growth and don't get things out of hand. So keep the nitrogen in check a little bit, but also really targeting the side dress and the granulars and stuff like that prior is a real easier management strategy, I would say, is probably the best way to put it, is an easier management strategy than kind of relying on foliars for at the end on nitrogen.
Sure. And calls and comments that I was getting mainly is like, you know, I've gone out and side dressed with, you know, a granular, let's say we put out urea or something like that. And we had a heavy rainfall event. I've got a couple inches of rain. I'm on some sands, you know, I don't think my nitrogen, I think my nitrogen may or may not have gone, and I want to supplement with foliar nitrogen. What would you say? What would you say from that standpoint?
So in that scenario, so like if you truly did lose it and you're actually out, you know, you spray that little bit of nitrogen, potassium on there, you can actually see it benefit and you get that bump that you see advertised, and that can be great. But you risk, like if you put that granular out and you're not waiting enough time for it to actually convert over and the plant to uptake and actually see that growth, and you start spraying too early, all of a sudden you have too much nitrogen because you put double down. You've doubled down with you got your side dress and you've got your foliar. So leave a little bit of time, kind of make sure you're actually truly have that lost that, not just assuming you lost it.
Okay. Just watching the crop. The crop will tell you what it needs.
Right.
All right. All right, Scott. I'm going to throw it your way.
Big bold words. It's like tales of cotton insects.
Right.
It's been really quiet.
Well, that's a good thing, right?
It's very good things. I think we've earned that after last year. Most of the phone calls, I'm starting to hear a little bit more about stink bugs and some older cotton and plant bugs here and there that are almost just got scouts, like where they're ready to say, all right, I'm good on this field. And they do one more spot and they're like, oh man, yeah, I want to do another one. But mostly it's been hard to justify even throwing in some imidacloprid in a pix for people, which is a great thing.
That's awesome.
Great thing.
Yeah.
And part of why I say that is, you know, the Jacid is still very low. I think it's probably tracking a lot like it did last year. But there's more people looking for it more intently at this point in the season, right?
Sure.
And so it is more, if you look at the map on the Stop Two Spot Cotton Leafhopper.org website, we have a map of everywhere that it was found last year, and then you can click find it in cotton and it'll show you in 26 where it has been found in cotton. If you look at that map, and if you have the knowledge that I do or the old pictures that I have, I know where it was on August the 8th of 2025. And we have it in more counties in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama this year than we did last year on August the 8th. But again, we're looking for it a whole lot closer. So that kind of makes sense.
Okay. Right.
Right. I mean, we're just looking for it more. But when I talk with my colleagues at Florida, Isaac Esquivel and Philip Roberts at Georgia, they are noticing a lot of predation by beneficial insects. And so I think our lack of plant bugs and stink bugs up until this point of the season has helped us preserve beneficial insects. And maybe at a certain point, you know, eventually beneficials will get overrun by pests or we'd never need insecticides, right? They could get us to the finish line. But I'm hoping maybe because we haven't been spraying as much up until this point, maybe they can get us a week further than they did last year or 2 weeks further. That's my hope.
Sure.
So right now I'm pretty optimistic about where we are. I will say that I'm starting to hear a little bit about white flies in Georgia. We've seen a few in Southeast Alabama as well. And so everybody who's been through white flies knows that for whatever reason, Biodrin is the one insecticide that seems to be worse at flaring them than any of the others. Of course, Biodrin provides good control of cotton jacet, economical control of cotton jacet anyway. So just be cognizant of that. If you've got white flies in the field, that is a pest that we would rather avoid. It seems like from what Ron has told me, thankfully we've not had really a bad white fly year since I've been here. But we got about 3 weeks notice when they start spraying in Georgia. We got about 3 weeks generally until we start seeding. So if we start hearing about that, we might consider leaving the Biodrin jug in the barn and pulling something else out if we need stink bugs or jacids or whatever you have. But right now, like I said, I feel like we're in really good shape on the insect front.
That's always a good sign. I went out, walking on farm today, and it was hard. Retention looked good. I saw maybe one plant bug.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah. So now that field you were in, partly it's so delayed because deer hammered it.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
But so for the late cotton we've got out there that hasn't been, it's not because of deer.
Sure.
How are you adjusting PGR management?
Sure. So that's a great question. So with these later planted cottons, we do need to be a little bit more aggressive on our plant growth regulators. And one of the main reasons why is that PGR aggressiveness can increase our earliness, right? So we're able to actually produce that crop in up to several days, up to over a week if you're very aggressive. But we don't want to be too aggressive, but kind of up those rates just to be sure that we're actually setting fruit, holding fruit, and we're producing just enough vegetative growth to set bolls and mature out faster. And we can get away with it more in South Alabama than North Alabama, right? Because we've got a longer growing season period in the south part. And so one of the big things, to keep in mind is a term called effective bloom date, right? And so that's the time period that a white flower goes all the way to a harvestable bowl.
Okay.
And that's going to change. That's going to change due to the first frost date. Okay. So the first frost date is going to be sooner in North Alabama than it is in Central and South Alabama. So roughly, I looked at some data in the 90s. I did a lot of cotton work in the 90s, and I feel like we revisit it a lot right now. It's kind of interesting what they did in the 90s and all the advancements, and we kind of look at it from a different angle, but it's pretty similar. And so from mainly August is your last effective bloom date. It's early August in North Alabama, and then once you go and taper down, it's later into late August is your effective bloom date, probably going into September in some of these spots. And I'm going to caveat with this is the great answer, well, it depends, and it really does. It depends on the temperature fluctuation. Because if we have a period like we did last year when it was really, really dry during harvest as we went into August and September, that effective bloom date period was shortened because of the light intensity, right? We had really good solar radiation. That speeds up any kind of reproduction. That speeds up our growth. So that's my caveat there. And that PGR aggressiveness kind of aids in that. Like, let's say we get into more cloudy conditions, we turn a little bit cool, that PGR can kind of help us increase our earliness and reduce those dates to maturity.
Generally speaking, how many days do you need from a white flower to a harvestable bowl?
I think it's about 60-something.
That's what I was thinking. It's around 60.
It's about 60-something days, 60-ish. Of course, everything depends, but roughly.
Yeah.
We'll say roughly.
So
I got a chart in my mind. That was a good one. I pulled it. I was like trying to remember exactly where it was.
60. So that's 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2 months.
Yep.
So that's out of, I remember asking Brad Meyer when I first started, I was trying to figure out what all my last bloom dates were. Cause sometimes that matters for, should we protect those?
Of course.
Those squares, those flowers or not. And
sure.
I remember asking him, he said, well, just tell me when the first frost is and I'll tell you what it is.
Yep. That's the best indicator usually. So past history, if you look at 25 and kind of look at that first frost date, you can count back and be like, okay, this is probably a good idea of where it is.
Yep.
One more thing about the foliars I was thinking about just now is I forgot to mention boron. So boron's normally a common one we see of foliars, and we're talking about harvest and improving the plants and stuff like that. And it's like boron's not one I've seen a lot, but we've seen some effective use with boron in the past. So just thought that I'd throw that out there. So that'd be something to look into for people if they're having some low boron deficiencies.
Yeah, because boron is, I haven't heard as many questions either about boron, but I have seen it around all the stations. They've got a case of it and everybody's putting it out, which it is recommended and it is needed for cotton development, cotton growth. But haven't got near as many questions as the foliar nitrogen and potassium.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting thing I was been thinking about, but yeah. some of the other crops. And so for soybeans, and so, you know, we've already missed the window for foliar feeding them, but, you know, there's some good finishing, you know, some of them times they can get a little bump with soybeans. We've missed the mark on that because that's a typically an R1, R3 grow stage around that early reproductive when the pods start to develop and start to fill. Corn, it's around that reproductive time period. So most crops, it falls in that same window. So just covering a few of the other crops, and peanuts, it kind of falls in that maybe 60, 90 days would be kind of the latest after planting would be the good time to do the foliars on them too. Sometimes if you're deficient, and you're not always going to see a response. If you're not deficient and you're not going to see a response, that's something to keep in mind, is you got to kind of know what you got a little bit to make that the most effective bang for the buck. But looking at corn, the corn crop's been looking good. I know we had a slow start this year, but everything's kind of finishing up pretty nice right now. We got them good timely rains, just like the cotton's doing pretty good through the middle of the season. The corn's been doing pretty good here to finish up, and the soybeans kind of in that same boat. I know we've seen a little bit of insect pressure from some beetles and stuff like that feeding, but not too bad.
This says just to 36 to 40 days. Okay, flower to mature. I was thinking 60 sounded like a long time.
For cotton?
Yeah, for cotton boll.
Have you seen any issues with soybean insects? I know I've seen some few little holes here and there.
But there's some pockets of loopers showing up in South Alabama in some places, and some red-banded stink bugs that we've heard about too, which red bands are more damaging than our traditional species and require a little bit more attention. But generally, every peanuts, cotton, soybeans, it's all been pretty quiet overall.
I know all my soybeans and peanuts look pretty nice.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, you know, I always say generally I only get a peanut question if somebody calls and asks about cotton. And then they're like, oh, by the way, since I got you. And so I wonder if I'm missing some stuff just because the cotton's been so quiet. But I think generally speaking, we've been pretty fortunate this year and as far as major pests outbreaks anyway.
Nice.
All righty. I think that's got us wrapped up. Any last remarks, guys?
All right. Well, enjoyed it today, guys. As always, if anybody has any topics that we'd like to discuss or anything, please let us know. And, of course, if any of us with Alabama Extension could do anything to help, don't hesitate at all to reach out.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.